Okay, good evening, everybody. This is part three of a three-part series. Sorry, my voice is still a little bit scratchy, but it's gonna improve as the evening goes on. Good evening, good evening. I hope there's more text. Is there a little bit more? Yeah, I've got a few more here. Now, as I said last week, the first two sessions, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which is coming upon us very, very quickly, we dealt with some more what I call more serious topics, the preparation of Rosh Hashanah, the sort of focus, what Rosh Hashanah is about. One of the things that always inspired me, the idea of the tefillot and the shofar, and then last week, trying to get a handle on what really Kol Nidre is about, which I hope was a revelation for some, if not for everybody. Certainly was when I heard it was a revelation to me as well. So this week, for something completely different, we're going to go to the other extreme. Instead of dealing with what I consider to be the heavy moral Musa message of Sukkos, I want to talk about the Ushpizim. It's one of those things that people do and that people say. I've got an article sitting here, and I'm sure it's in here somewhere. If I can't find it very quickly, then I won't try. It's usually after the... it may not even have it in here. That would be very strange. I'd be surprised. But it's got the Hoshanas, but maybe before... you'd see them in a sukkah. It must have, yes. No. I'm looking for this, and it doesn't have it. So it's interesting, right? Just as a comment, it's got a shpiz in here, but very short. Okay, it's got a bit of it. Page 720 in the Ask Rosh Siddur. Ushpizin is a word that means guests, okay? And what I wanted to do is to try and get a handle on this minhag. I've had experience of ushpizin in different locations, different circumstances. I explain what I mean. When I was growing up, I come from Northwest London, which, and when I grew up, those who've been to London, you know, there's something called the Underground as opposed to the subway, but it's the same thing. Actually, it's not the same thing. I think it's a bit nicer than the subway here, certainly the New York subway, which I can give a whole share about another time. The whole interesting thing that what happened to me is when we moved to the neighborhood that I grew up in, which is a place called Edgware, which has now become a very religious neighborhood. In those days, we had a number of shuls. There was literally the biggest shul in Europe was located in that neighborhood. This is in the Guinness Book of Records. You want to check it out. It says so there. It was a very sort of what we call a more modern shul, and majority of people there were not Shomer Shabbat, but certainly belonging to an Orthodox synagogue. But there was also, as always, there's a little, wasn't even a breakaway. There was like two or three smaller shuls, which were clearly more towards the Orthodox persuasion. And the shul that I went to was known as Adas. And Adas there was, in fact, a very small but very close-knit, would you call it Haredi? I don't think so. It was just a bunch of religious guys who made their own shul, and there was a daily minyan and everything else. And the Rav there was a very interesting man. The Rav there was somebody called Rabbi Jacob Heschel. And Jacob Heschel was the brother of A.J. Heschel. If you ever heard of A.J. Heschel from JTS, then this was the brother of. They were from a Hasidish family. Their grandfather had become a Rebbe in Poland. There's a whole story about that. I remember A.J. Heschel coming to London and being so impressed. And what impressed me, I must have been like 14 or 15. He came for a simcha and he spoke. He gave the drosha on Shabbos. In the shul. I was a bit surprised they allowed him to speak, but I suppose if he's the Rav's brother, what are you going to do? I think that in England they didn't quite understand the nuances of JTS and what it was in those days, although certainly it was a lot more connected to tradition maybe than it is today, I don't know. But the reality of it was that when he spoke, I always was, to me what sticks in my mind is the fact that the brother in London had such a Polish English, you know, it was very broken English, and A.J. Heschel was like, wow, you know, this guy really can put it together. And he gave a speech. I can't tell you what he spoke about, but it was very impressive at the time. But Rabbi Heschel, Jacob Heschel, was a wonderful man. He was of the Hasidic world. And Ushpizin to him was something, you know, this was like the focus of sukkahs. The shul had a sukkah, and you had to have the names of the Ashpizin on the wall and all this sort of thing. And I didn't know what was going on. You know, I'd never come from a background where we actually, we had sukkah, you know, where we did sukkah in shul or whatever, but we didn't do Ashpizin. Never heard of it. And all of a sudden, you know, I was sort of exposed to it in a very extreme way. And I tried to find out a little bit. And it's always been intrigued over the years. I've seen it in Israel. I've seen it in, you know, when we lived in Israel for a time, obviously here. And some people do it. Some people don't do it. My son-in-law is very, very particular to read the whole, there's a whole Yirat, there's a whole page of very small print in the article. If you're hungry on sukkahs, don't go to that sukkah because it takes him 20 minutes to read it. You got to wait for him to finish the whole Shpizin. What I wanted to do, in terms of trying to explain it, trying to give it a bit of significance that maybe we can all attach something, learn something from it. I scouted around for someone who writes about it. There's an article that I do recommend, which I haven't touched. And the article comes in, I think you get it, the magazine here, YU put out a Torah to Go piece, and they do it for sukkahs. So in 2014, there's actually a piece I wrote there, not about Ashpizin, but there's also a piece on the Ashpizin from Rabbi Brand. Rabbi Brand from the Kollel in Chicago, and he writes a very beautiful article, and that's an article which I recommend highly, because, you know, it's really written with a very significant sort of approach to the whole thing. What I wanted to do was to do more the what I call the klali, the general things. And I found this article from somebody called Joseph Perlman. Now, my wife will know who Joseph Perlman is because he's a lawyer in London who is also a rabbi, comes from the same town that my mother-in-law comes from, in the north of England, and is really a very remarkable gentleman in his own right. Shabbi Gazud, you know, he's someone who is involved with Chinuch, he's a very big philanthropist, he's a very special man. And he, over the years, has put together articles on these types of very unusual topics. So if you'll bear with me, the way this works is that it goes from right to left. It's Hebrew, I suppose, we'll go from right to left. But you'll see I've got here a section. So the first section, A and B, the second section, A and B, and then the third section, it goes A and B. And what we'll do is we'll go across. There seems a lot here, but what I'll do, some of it we'll read from the text, and some of it I will summarize. And just to give you the general feel of what this custom is really all about, the focus of the custom, and at the end I want to suggest one or two, maybe a chiddush, something that occurred to me on the way home on the bus. The bus is always a good time to contemplate, to think. And I thought of something which may be relevant to the whole custom of Ashpizin that nobody, I haven't seen written anywhere. So we'll come to that hopefully at the end. So what is the custom? So have a look at this. This is the first section here on the right-hand side, section A. Al etzem amina. So it's a custom right around the Jewish world. What is known in the this is going to become very Kabbalistic, and probably that's why a lot of people don't want to maybe even go near it, or certainly not to indulge in it. But you know, let's try and understand what it's about. There's a concept called seven shepherds. The Seven Shepherds, sounds like a pub in England. I know a pub called the Seven Shepherds. But this is a different concept. The idea of seven leaders of the Jewish people, right? Those of you who say the last verse of Moz Tzur, I think we make a reference to the the one that a lot of people don't want to say because it was censored. But I think there's a reference there, if I'm not mistaken, to these seven shepherds. I think it's the same reference. Yeah, here we go. And it's Chasov Zerodon. One second, where are we? Hakeim Lono Roim Shiva. Right at the end of the mosque, so those who say the last verse, the very last verse, the last phrase is established for us Roim Shiva, the seven shepherds. So this seems to be a concept which is found in, certainly in Kabbalistic writing. So back to the text. Who are the seven shepherds? And they call b'shem Ushpizin. And these are called Ushpizin. The word Ushpizin is not Hebrew. The word Ushpizin, Ashbez, in fact, in modern Hebrew, it's been taken on by modern Hebrew. Ishpuz means to be put into hospital, right? Ashbez, I mean, that's a word that you need to know if you're in Israel. But the word Ushpizin is an Aramaic word and it means guest. Okay, and this is the idea. Third line. And we greet them with this whole piece that we have in the Siddur called the Seidur Shpizin. And we read it through. Now, what's the source? Where does it come from? Mekar hazmanatosh bizin. Bechag ha-sukot eino muskar b'shas. It's not in the Talmud. But poskim, it's not in the deciders of the law. Harishonim klal, who were the early rabbis. Rashi doesn't talk about it. Rambam doesn't talk about it. Nobody talks about it. Ukineres, where does it come from? Fascinating. You know, you think to yourself, something like this probably goes back, who knows, into antiquity. Nechdigatuk, nothing, not mentioned anywhere. Ukineres, minagzeh, yashomor, lemekubolim, vechaside elyon. It's something which was guarded for the mekubolim, for those who were into the Kabbalah, into the mystical texts of Torah. Shenoguka, they had the custom. Ki makoro hu me'azor ha-kodosh. It's something that's mentioned. This is just going on to section B on the left hand side. It comes from the Zohar. Kidahala. Ubikvot atkufa zuva. Now this is interesting. So when did it actually start? And it goes together with something else which we find in our tradition, which also comes very late in the day. And it's something which we all enjoy, and we all if you come to Shul Friday night, Lecha Dodi. Where does Lecha Dodi come from? It comes from the 15th century in Svat. There were a whole bunch of rabbis there who were really working hard to bring Mashiach. Wasn't quite ready, wasn't quite the time, but they were certainly a bunch of very holy men. The author of the Shulchan Aruch, and you had Rabbi Alkabetz, who wrote the Lecha Dodi, and you had the Menorah Samor. You had a whole bunch of very famous rabbis. They were all together. And it seems that Ushpizin comes from the same world. And again, I'll read what he says. It will be the top line of B. Ubikvatat kufa zuva. The famous Ari, the Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, who was the famous Kabbalist, he died at the age of 39. All right, that makes an interesting question. They always say you shouldn't read Kabbalah till you're 40. Yet the guy who wrote it died when he was 39. So, you know, he wrote Kabbalistic books. So, you know, you ask the question, why was he writing them if he wasn't yet 40? But the Ari was a very, very unique individual. I can't really go into his whole approach at this point, but it's something to talk about another time. So it says, Nitkabel minag yafezeh. So from that period of Tzvat, the 1500s, that's when the whole custom of Ushpizin began. B'chol olam, k'mo b'zmirot le'er Shabbat l'chol dodi. And it's exactly the same as the l'chol dodi. And there were other customs that came out of that same school of rabbis. Kein gam ushpizin yesh yoter minagechot. There are different customs in the ushpizin. Hein bazmanat shiva ushpizin, how you invite them in. Hein beseda shiva muzmanim. The order, right? You'll find that you'll get your decorations for sukkah, and they will have the order of ushpizin. One decoration will have, what does it go? Avram, Yisrael, Yaakov. Moshe, Aaron, David, and Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, and David, and that of course puts Yosef in the wrong order, because Yosef should come before Moshe if you go according to the natural order of when they live. And other Ushpizin do put Yosef first. So there's even a strange anomaly in the order of the people that we are listing in this particular list. So maybe we'll talk about that later. I'm not sure. I think he does actually talk about that. So he says, Vahem, Bitzvilot, Bakashot, etc., etc. Now, section B, here he goes, the order of the Ushpizin. And let's just see a little bit of what he says over here. He goes through the whole Nusach of what we say. Beyond Rishon, I just want to read it's the order in which the Ushpizin are invited. Again, section A. So it's on the right hand side, the last paragraph there. Beyom Rishon Omrim, B'mati Minoch Avraham Ushpizin Eloi. We say we invite Avraham, our guest. Diyat V'imi V'imach, he should sit with me. Kol Ushpizin Eloi, and he brings all the other guests with. Who are they? Yitzhak, Yaakov, Yosef. Now they put the order as it is in chronological order. Yosef comes before Moshe, Aaron, and then David. V'chein b'chol laila v'laila, and every night the same thing. Who's missing on that very venerable list? At the end of the list, what would you have put if you were going to sort of make it a bit more inclusive? Shlomo. I would have put Shlomo in. All right. Now again, I'm going to make a suggestion. He's got a suggestion at the end here. Why Shlomo's not included? And there are a number of suggestions of why Shlomo is not included, especially if you learn Tanakh and you find out what happened to Shlomo, you might have some doubts of whether you would actually include Shlomo in the end, for reasons that we may suggest towards the end of this. Have a look at this, just on the other section here, which is the the left hand side of that column. So we go through this whole long paragraph on the first night of Sukkot. Some people do, as I said, my son-in-law does it religiously. I don't think I've said that in 40 years, but you know, as I said, when I grew up in the Hasidic enclave that I was in, it was religiously said. But Parma Rishona, but Laila Rishon, if they Kiddush, you do it before Kiddush. And every night before you go into the sukkah, la suda ta'er, you do it in the evening. Omrim, you say, rach hareni mucha. You don't have to go through the whole thing, the whole page of inviting the guest. You just say, who is the special guest? Hareni mucha mezuman, azamin sudosi, etc. You invite whoever it is. Now, interestingly, the bottom section here is part of what we have made of the Ushpizit. The Ushpizin have become minoy sukkah. It's part of the beauty or the decoration of the sukkah. And the suggestion is, why do we invite them? Because we want to beautify the sukkah. There's an interesting thing, there are different minhagim here. Chabad, which is very out on a limb on this, because I was really shocked. Again, you know, when I was growing up, there were a number of very sort of staunch Chabad families in the neighborhood, and they don't hang up anything in the sukkah. I mean, they may have a picture of the Rebbe, but I'm not even sure if they do that. They don't. Their tradition was to put nothing on the walls of the sukkah whatsoever. We cover the walls with posters, and we hang all the fruits and the, you know, and all the different things that the kids make in school, and they bring it all over. And you must hang it up, otherwise you're in trouble. You got to do all that. The reality of it is that this Ushpizin is part of the decoration of the sukkah. This is brought as a source. So if we do hang these things up, we shouldn't feel bad about it. Okay? And some of us, you know, sort of, they're very decorative things. Interesting. I just want to show you B. V'chidah. Now the chidah is it's the B, which is the left-hand corner at the bottom of the first page. The chidah is Chaim Yitzchak David Azulai. Azulai, this very, very amazing rabbi. Not only was he a great Talmud Chacham, not only was he a great writer, right? But he was a traveler. He traveled around the world, particularly the Middle East. He actually got to Europe, and he wrote about it. He wrote diaries. And this chidah, this gentleman, who is very, very well known, just a little anecdote. When I first started teaching in Hebrew school in London, there's somebody on my list whose name was Azulai. Azulai is the family name. Azulai was taken, they're all Kohanim. And it's an abbreviation. Aleph, Zayin, Lamed, Vav, Lamed, Yud. Isha, Zona, V'chalala, Lo Yikachu. It's a pasuk about the Kohen. And that's the name, Azulai. Each letter of the first word became the name, Azulai. And you may have Azulais in this country, I'm sure there are descendants. But this young man, sitting in my class, his name's Azulai. So I asked him at the end of the lesson, I said, by the way, you know, do you know where your family is from? Are you Ashkenazi, Sephardi? He told me Sephardi. And he said, you know, my father told me that there was a very famous rabbi once upon a time. You know, he's my great-great-whatever grandfather. And I thought, you know, I nearly sort of passed out because here is the great, you know, descendant of the chidah sitting in front of me. I said, do you know anything about your great-great-great-grandfather? He said, no. And I had a book about the chidah and I gave it to him. Never got the book back. And I was very happy about that. Because you know what? Maybe it may have spurred him. Who knows? It may have got him interested and more connected. I just don't know. But the chidah is a phenomenon. So look what he writes here about a minhag, which I've never seen. But he says, a chidah b'machzik brocha, this is a book that the chidah wrote, and after the bracket, katav the yeshno agin ladlik basuka shiva neirot. Some people light seven candles in the sukkah. Never seen that. And I don't think it's a very, very positive or clever thing to do, because, you know, you may end up without a sukkah. He says, keneged shiva ashpizin. You want to invite the ashpizin, so you have seven candles. Very nice. But says Rabbi Polman, we don't do it, mishum sakona delekat esh, because it might set fire to the sukkah. Very smart. Oh, mishum sharuch matsui mechabel, you'll have a wind and it'll get blown out. Not a good thing to do. I suppose maybe you could do an electric, you know, sort of light. I don't know. I've never seen it. Ki afilu b'neirot Shabbat m'simin otam b'toch ha'chalon min atzad shal ha'sukkah. You know, you don't even put the Shabbos candles really in the sukkah. You leave them near the sukkah in the house or something like that. So we've got to be careful. But that again is kind of interesting. Just these little extra embellishments of this particular minhag are very fascinating. If you go to the next page, page 2, you actually have the source in the Zohar, and I just want to read this to you. Where does this come from? The Zohar, as we know, is essentially a commentary that, well, there are many books which are included in that literature, but it's a commentary from the second century of the Common Era, the discussions of Reb Shimon bar Yochai and his Chaverim on the Torah. There's a book here, a translation of the Zohar. Okay, you can take that away, you can read it from, you know, now to you know, what's the Yiddish expression? But I bismonte, you know, you can read from now to next week to the week after, and it you know, you may read the words, but does it mean anything? Zohar is a very, very interesting thing. There is a Kabbalah Center. Okay, some of you may know about this. Kabbalah Center in New York, and there's a Kabbalah Center now in Boca Raton. I have a student, had a student in Stone College, who came in one day, and she wanted to speak to me. So she said that her background, she got switched on to becoming more connected to Judaism, was through the Kabbalah Center. So I was a bit taken aback, but I wanted to know, what do they do there? They study these very difficult texts. So I said to her, who did you meet there? She said, well, you may have heard of my chavrusa, you know, my learning partner. She called herself Esther, but you probably know her as Madonna. That's what she said to me. She just threw out the comment. And I said, you're kidding me. I said, you get free tickets to the concert. So she said, well, you know, we've got a good relationship, she said. So she was learning with Madonna. I mean, it's an amazing story. And I can't make this up. So this is what goes on. But essentially, you'll find one or two yeshivas in Yerushalayim that they specialize in this particular material. Lot of problems with it because, number one, it's clearly on a different plane. It's a different level of understanding of Torah. And more to the point, most of it's written in Aramaic. And unless you've got a very good working knowledge of Aramaic, it really is a closed book, although now there's so many. Oscar hasn't done the official translation, but that will come out one day, I'm pretty sure. So listen to this. It's the section A of page 2 at the top, and it's the Makar Shel Minag, Hurak Bazar Kodesh. So if you want to get to the source of this whole thing of Ushpizin, I'll tell you where it comes from. The Isa Bazar, because it says in the Zohar, Ber Shata Debar Nash, ready, this is Aramaic, at the time Debar Nash Yativ, when a person sits, Bimadura Tzela Demnuta, the Zohar, the esoteric literature, calls the Sukkah the shadow of faith. The Matzah is called the bread of faith, and the Sukkah is the shadow of faith. I suppose because you're in a sukkah, you know, it's one of those things where you have to have a lot of emunah. You have to have a lot of faith. This is the sukkat shalom. The idea of sukkat shalom is the idea that the sukkah represents peace. Because you said in the sukkah, it can be blown down, it can be whatever. And in order to create peace also, I think Rabbi Jacobus said this once, the chief rabbi in England, that you have to have a lot of emunah, a lot of faith. He was talking about the Palestinian Israeli situation 30 years ago, and it doesn't seem to have changed very much. It's an act of faith, and the sukkah is called the sukkah shalom, the sukkah of peace, because it represents peace. It can be very flimsy, and very much you have to go and make a statement of faith in order for it to happen. And we're still waiting for that statement to come about, but please go one day. So he says that, back to the Zohar, he says, Shechinta parsa gadfana, or gadpara alei. So what happens is, when you're sitting in the sukkah, the divine presence has its wings over you, whatever that means. I don't know what this means. But he says, Mila Eila goes over you, for Avram v'chamisha tzadikai achranin, and Avram and five other tzadikim. So according to this, there's only six, not seven. Shavyon madurehon imei, they sit with you. Amar Rabbi Abba, Avram v'chamisha tzadikai, v'david malka. Ah, so he says, no, it's Avram, five tzaddikim make six, and David. You add to David as well. Defil Shavi Mudurele, they sit with you. And just look at the column on the continuation on the left hand side. Ubehem Shech HaZohar, Huvam Maaseh, the Zohar itself brings a story, but Rav Amnon HaSaba. This is a rabbi who's mentioned in the Talmud as well. A guy called Rav Amnon, Shaya Noheg Lazmin Lesukato Orchim Aniyim. And this is the heart of this custom. That why do we invite these very incredible guests to our sukkah, you know, to come in, because it's to encourage us to invite poor people to the sukkah. People may not have a sukkah, or people who are looking to find a place to eat. That's the essence, really, one of the major ideas of the Ushpizin. And he says that what happens is that it's the custom to invite these orchim aniyim, third line, lismach itam b'chag, and to rejoice. V'aminag nosaf ayalo, and he had this Rav Hamnun in the Gemara, a Talmudic rabbi, had an extra custom. Kishayah nichnas the sukkah, when he came into the sukkah, hoyomeid besimcha petach hasukkah milifnim, he would stand by the entrance of the sukkah with great joy, mazmina shpizin, and he would invite in the guests. Maybe they are the physical guests, also the spiritual guests. Umachris shavu, he would say, sit down. Urchim el yonim, these elevated guests, obviously referring to the Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Shavu shpizin yikarin min olam haba. Those of you who have come to my sukkah from the next world. Wow. That must have been a pretty holy sukkah, if you can just imagine going into a sukkah like that. Outstanding. And basically, the next section here, the purpose of inviting them, is really what he says, the idea of increasing that sense of involvement with the community. I feel very strongly that the whole thing of Ushpizin has got so many ramifications. It's the essence of Judaism in so many ways, because, you know, the Chagim, it's all very nice. We can live on a desert island and be Jewish. But if you live on a desert island, you won't really be as Jewish as you could be, because you're missing out on the communal aspect of the religion. The reality is, we need to live in communities where we are together and we do celebrate together and we do, you know, when you make a wedding or Nebuch, you have a berima, whatever it is, people get involved and people are there to comfort you, to make you happy, to rejoice. And when necessary, we are there to help people, gemach and everything else. And this is part of what Ushpizin really is about. The idea should be that sukkah revolves around bringing guests into the sukkah, bringing people into the sukkah, having that sense of the sukkah being an open place. A place which would be available, would be open. This is why many shuls have sukkahs, which is such a universal custom again around the world. The idea is that the sukkah should be a place where everybody can come in, everybody should feel welcome. And this again is something which I think is so, so important. Just want to read one of these pieces to you. The bottom of that middle section on the right-hand side, Bisod V'Shosh Avoda. That's a book which, again, is a very interesting book. I've got a copy of it at home. It's a Lithuanian gentleman who wrote a Hasidic sefer. He was very coming from the non-Hasidic world, but he was into Hasidic stuff in a big way, except he didn't call it Hasidic. It turned out very much of a similar idea. And he writes like this at the bottom of that piece, Mesaye Ma'amaro Bazara Lumot Torah Ala Shulchan. When you're sitting in the sukkah, one should study Torah. Lichvod Ashiva Shpizin Kadishin, in honor of these seven holy guests. Ki Ika Kvodam Hu Alimud Ala Shulchan. This main idea of honoring the guests is to learn at the table. Uzmirot, and to sing. Ushvachim Lanot Aniyim, to give. Help poor people to have some pleasure and joy. And that's why I saw this and I thought immediately of the movie Ushpizin, which I hope many of you have seen. And if you haven't, it's just worth seeing again, or seeing for the first time. It's even on YouTube apparently, so you don't even have to take it out of anyway. You don't have to rent it. It's this wonderful story about this couple in Yerushalayim. It became a big hit. This became a big hit in Israel, the film Ushpizin. It came out about, what, 10 years ago? Must have been 9 or 10 years ago, made by, and the actors were Haredi guys. The Shuli Rand, I think his name, he had his wife to play the other part because he refused to act with any other woman, which I found very interesting. All right, you know, that would be complicated in Hollywood because, you know, who they're going to, they're getting divorced every Monday and Thursday, so it's complicated over there. But reality is that the beautiful part about the movie was that this is really the focus of the movie. The idea was, you know, that he's looking for an etrog for sukkahs, and he wants to borrow this money. And in the meantime, one of he's a bal tshuva, he's a Braslav, and Braslav are very intense. And one of his old colleagues, who was unfortunately had not become a bal tshuva, he was a ganav, I think, and he specialized in stealing whatever he was. And he came to visit him over sukkahs, and the whole interaction between this man's new life and this man's old life, fascinating film. Very much worth seeing if you haven't seen it, or to see it again. And it revolves around this whole thing of, do I bring them in? You know, the sukkah should be a place where anybody can come in. And that's part of the focus of that particular film. The bottom here has got an interesting thing of, why don't we do Ushpizin on Pesach? At the end of the day, if we're doing something for seven, and sukkah is essentially 7 days, which is part of the reference to it, why not on Pesach? So one of the answers which is given is that, remember, sukkahs, every day, halal is a new halal. right? You don't, like Pesach, you don't do just the beginning of Yom Tov, and then the rest of the Yom Tov is what they call Chatzi Halah. Not really Chatzi, but you just miss out some of the paragraphs. The Halal of Pesach is really connected to the beginning of it. Whereas Sukkot, every single day, the joy becomes greater and greater and greater. And therefore, the idea is that in order to have this sense of joy, we invite these guests. Every day, a new person comes in, a new guest, someone who will increase, who will make the joy of the holiday even more intense for us. And I think that's one of the suggestions he brings here. And again, I just want to move on. If you want to take this and look at it, it's not a hard article to work through, and it really is a very beautiful collection of ideas. Section G is the one I wanted to get to, where Shlomo Melech. So listen to this. This is very, very interesting. Why isn't Shlomo in the Ushpizit? Why did we stop at David? You know, you would have thought it should have been Shlomo as well. Think about it for a second. In our davening, what do we have? Literally, certainly on Shabbos and many other occasions, we always have David ben Yishai. We're always referring to David, the son of Yishai. I always remember the story of the Chazan who got carried away. David ben Yishai, David ben Yishai. And he's saying Yishai ben David because he mixed up the words. That was a famous Chazana story. But the reality of it is David ben Yishai, but no tefillah Shlomo ben David. It's not there. I think the only time we mention Shlomo, if I'm not mistaken, is the Mishnah Berakh when we pray for someone who is not well. Avram Yisrael, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, David, who's Shlomo? Who you rapping? I'm pretty sure Shlomo is mentioned there in the prayer for the sick. But the actual reference to Shlomo otherwise doesn't exist. We don't refer to Shlomo. He wants to suggest here that Shlomo is not mentioned because in essence, Shlomo is number 8. And there is part of the story, in fact, it's one of the Haftarot we read on Sukkot, is about Shlomo celebrating Shmini Atzeret. Shlomo made the dedication of the temple, and the dedication of the temple was, in fact, for 14 days, and included 7 days of Sukkot, plus, in fact, there was one extra day, it says, where he said the people should stay, and that became the source, or one of the sources, one of the ideas of Shmini Atzeret. We have this extra day. And you can read about it in Malachim Aleph, in chapter 8 of Malachim. And he says like this, Shlomo HaMelech Shmini Atzeret, this is page 3 at the top on the right, Av Shenitche Adeya, the Shlomo HaMelech Hu Echad Me'ashiv Ushpizin, we now know that Shlomo is not one of the 7 guests, Mikol Mokom, Yeshem Osifim Oto L'Ushpiz HaShminit, some people do include him, when, U'machnisim Oto L'Shmini Atzeret. Now, of course, that works if you sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. That's only in Israel. We don't sit in the sukkah out of Israel. In Israel, they don't sit in the sukkah in Shmini Atzeret. You're not allowed to, okay? Because it's not sukkahs anymore. It's Shmini Atzeret. So this would work outside Israel to on Shmini Atzeret. If you want to have to continue the thought of Ushpizin, you would invite for Shmini Atzeret Shlomo HaMelech. I'll be honest, I've never seen that done. I've never been in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret where they've invited Shlomo HaMelech to come in. But that's his suggestion. And third line, U'machnisim oto l'shmini atzeret, v'yesh la'atim min hagzeret. I want to give a basis for this custom. Ki shmini atzeret, hi siyum machak. Shmini atzeret is the end of the holiday, essentially. U'bo mesayimim et ha-Torah b'chol shana. And of course, it's Simchat Torah as well. We finished the Torah. V'chein Shlomo yodat kol ha-Torah. A bit shva. He says, Shlomo knew the whole Torah. Shlomo knew everything. Okay, if you actually look in the commentaries on Shlomo, there is a suggestion that he actually knew how to build an engine. He knew how to, he knew the physics of the combustion engine, just couldn't put it together for reasons, maybe didn't want to put it together, it's not clear, all right, but there is a suggestion that he knew that. There's also a suggestion, by the way, that he discovered America. In case you were wondering, it was Columbus, it really wasn't. It was Shlomo HaMelech about 2,000 years before Columbus, sent ships to Peru, to South America, because he was looking for gold, because he wanted to embellish the temple. So he was looking, so he says he went to the land of Ophir. And the rabbi said, Ophir, you think of the root, Pei Resh, and they say Ophir comes from connected to the word Peru, that he actually sent ships to Peru to bring gold to Eretz Israel. Kind of interesting thought. So he may have been sort of hanging out in South America a long time before anybody else. So there is this idea that Shlomo HaMelech, who represents the inclusion of the whole of Torah, he is someone who is represented by Shmini Atzeret, the 8th Ushpizin. All right? And he wants to say also There is this suggestion also in section B over here that he had this extra day of celebration, which is mentioned in Melachim, and therefore it's very suitable that Shlomo becomes the eighth guest. The only problem is that, I feel very much that there is a sort of downside to this, because when you read the story of Shlomo, you realize that at the end, his downfall was very, very immediate and very fast. He was someone who started off on such a high that they had 40 years. There was no war and there was no lacking of everything, that everyone, tachat te'eno, tachat gafno, the famous expression, everybody was under their vine and under their fig tree, and they were living such an incredible life. And then Shlomo got involved, his wives, the 1,000 wives that he had, 700 wives, 300 concubines, and then put that together, it just blows the mind. And the fact that they started influencing to get involved in idolatry, if you look there, it says that Shlomo made an idol. All right, and the rabbis say, what do you mean he made an idol? He was too smart for that. He would never have made an idol. The fact is, the rabbis say, what he did is he allowed his wives to make idols. And because he allowed them to do it, he was complicit. He was involved with the act. And my suggestion really is not to say like that he should be number eight and tack him on at the end. But the fact is, I think on purpose he's missed out, as he is in the Tefillah, because there is a lot of grey at the end of the life of Shlomo. And not to say that's a bad thing, it's just a reality. The reality of it is, David, with all of his problems with Bathsheba and everything that he went through, he always did tshuva. David is the epitome of tshuva in Torah, in Tanakh. And Shlomo were not given that same sense of repentance, of wanting to reconnect to a level that he was at the beginning. And it's so shocking at the end how quickly he falls out of favor. And of course, after Shlomo, there is chaos. The north of Israel goes one way, the south of Israel goes the other way. And it's a very sort of sad parsha. So why Shlomo is not in the Ashpizin, as he's not in the prayers, I would argue, is more for the reality of what happened to Shlomo as recorded in the Bible. So that's just a separate discussion. I threw in at the end here what I'm calling Ramazim. Oh boy, where do we go from here? Just try one or two. There's a few gematrias here. Those who like gematrias, the numerical values. Let's have a look at number one. Aleph. Kol Ezrach Yisro Yeshru Basukot B'Shach Al Torah. There's a commentary of the Shach, very famous commentator on the Shulchan Aruch, but he also wrote a commentary on the Torah, and he says like this. It's the third line. The phrase Kol Ezrach Yisrael Yeshru Basukot. All the natives of Israel, every Jew will sit in the sukkah. In the sukkah, if you take that phrase, Im Chamesha Tevot. If you take the five words, Ole Begematria 1619, it becomes a Gematria of 1619. Shehi Gematria Shel Avram Yitzchak Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe, Aaron, and David. Right? And that's the same Gematria. If you put those together, notice that Yitzchak is written with a shin. Yitzchak, not Yitzchak. And you find that it is written like that in certain places, and he explains. He says, V'ha de Allah Yitzchak b'shin. Why is it Yitzchak? And you find in Tehillim Kufhei, if you look in Tehillim 105, it says, Bimkom Yitzchak, we read it with a tzadi, right? Karagil, Hu mipnei shehu yoshev basukkah, because Yitzchak is sitting in the sukkah, besimcha v'sochek im banav shu avarachamon. He's there besimcha, Yitzchak. The idea that it's the sin, the sort of reference to simcha, v'sochek, and he's smiling. He's smiling with all of his children, with his generations. Remember that it could have stopped with Yitzchak and that would have been the end of it, as we're going to read in Rosh Hashanah, the whole story of the Akedah. And for Yitzchak to be in the sukkah, we stress the fact of sechok, how beautiful it is and how the smile, the pleasure that particularly Yitzchak gets when he sees Am Yisrael in the sukkah. There are so many other gematrias here. I'm not even going to begin to try and go through it. Just look at B. The first one, Avram is Resh Memched, Avram is 248. And this word sukkah, bimelo, if you take the word sukkah and you write out the letters, complete, samach, samach memchaf. You know, the word samach can be written as a three-letter word. Samach memchaf, you do all of the word of the word sukkah and you write out the whole word in those full letters, then you come out to the same gematria of 248. So Avram equals sukkah. Okay, who knew? I'm probably not any the wiser, but it's fun. And Rabbi Perlman likes all these gematrias. I know he likes them because he does them very often. I just want to make one suggestion, as I said at the beginning, something that occurred to me, which may be radical, I don't know. Think about the people we're inviting into the sukkah. You can ask the question, a more fundamental question in a way. We're inviting biblical personalities to come and sit in the sukkah. Why don't we invite people, maybe we can relate to a bit more, rabbis of the previous generation, you know, people that maybe we connected to are no longer alive, or famous people that we've heard of in the previous generation, maybe rabbis from the Talmud that we've all heard, let's say Rabbi Akiva, let's say Rabbi Yishmael, we say Rabbi Yishmael every day, we refer to him every day. Why do we go back to these biblical people? Why do we invite Avraham Yitzchak? Yeah, I know you'll say to me, we know them very well, fine. But at the end of the day, there's something about inviting them as a group, and only biblical personalities and not rabbinic personalities. And to me, it's something which maybe is something new. I don't know. But I spoke about this when I was with my daughter in Houston last year, 2 years ago. I gave a shiur there on the question of whether David HaMelech kept sukkahs. This might come as a bit of a shock. The Gemara says, and it's based on a pasuk in the book of Nehemiah, I didn't have a chance to bring all the sources. I think you've got enough sources here to keep you going. The verse in Nehemiah says that the holiday of Sukkot was not celebrated till the Jews came back to Eretz Israel at the time of the Second Temple. From the days of Joshua to the days of the Second Temple, it says they did not celebrate Sukkot. And the question is, and it says that, and it's a verse in Nehemiah chapter 8, you can look it up, and all the rabbis are very perplexed. The Gemara in Erechin asked the question, how is it possible that King David did not sit in a sukkah? How is it possible that Shlomo HaMelech did not sit in a sukkah? And there's a lot of discussion and there's a lot of Torah about it. But the Malbim, the famous commentary on the Tanakh, the Malbim of the 19th century, he gives a halachic explanation which suggests that David did not sit in a sukkah, ever. David lived in Jerusalem. And Jerusalem, he claims, was public domain. It had not been divided amongst the tribes, because if you give it to one group, another group is going to have a big machlokas. You know, you gave it to Shimon, why did you give it to Reuven? Why didn't you give it to Levi? Why didn't you give it to Yisachar? You can imagine, the whole thing of Jerusalem was very, very difficult. So they kept it universal. It was the universal city as far as the tribes were concerned. And the reality is, says the Malbim, that when you have a sukkah in a public domain, you're not fulfilling the mitzvah, because it's not yours. You haven't got the ownership of the sukkah, because it's in a public domain. All right, that's why putting the sukkah in the street sometimes is a bit complicated. And in Yerushalayim, there's a big issue about this. But the reality of it is, if you do it, let's say where we are in an apartment, if we did it outside, we'd have to get permission from the landlord to put up a sukkah, and then already you can count it as your domain. But with that permission, without it, doing it sort of without the permission is not a good idea. So the Malbim argues, and this is a very big shock, that in the days of David, the early days when Jerusalem was, in terms of recognition amongst everybody, a public domain, they hadn't sorted out exactly what the status was going to be for the future, which it did change eventually. The reality of it is, if it's a public domain, the mitzvah of sukkah was not fulfilled by David or by Shlomo. They did not sit in sukkahs. Go to Yosef, the one before them. He was in Mitzrayim. Did he sit in a sukkah in Mitzrayim? I've got to suggest, I'm pretty skeptical about it, that he probably did not sit in a sukkah in Jerusalem, in Egypt. You know, in wherever, in Cairo, or whatever the town was called. You know, Ramses and Pitom and Ramses, he didn't sit in a sukkah. Go even further back, and you go to Moshe and Aaron. So you'll say to me, oh, those guys sat in a sukkah, they were in the desert. They had sukkahs, but they didn't. There's a very strong suggestion that they had the clouds of glory, but the clouds of glory became the sukkah. And they didn't sit in a sukkah under the clouds of glory for a very simple reason. That there's a statement in the Gemara that sukkah tachat sukkah, if you build a sukkah under a sukkah, you're not yotze, in the bottom sukkah. Because you've got a problem between you and the sky, there's another sukkah. You can't sit in the bottom one because there's a big sukkah blocking the way through to the sky. So if they sat in a sukkah under the clouds of glory, which became a sukkah, they're sitting in a sukkah under a sukkah, they won't fulfill the mitzvah. So it could be that even Moshe and Aaron did not sit in a sukkah in the desert. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, what are we going to say? You'll say to me, okay, Rashi tells us they kept the whole Torah. Okay, and there's always this suggestion that they would keep Pesach, there's a whole thing that they did matzah, references to this, and there's the posuk in Parshat Toldot. But again, if you think about it, does it really make sense that they would keep certain mitzvot they may have kept. Did they keep all the mitzvot? And sukkahs particularly, with all the historical connection of going out of Egypt, would it have been relevant to Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov to keep to sit in a sukkah? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there because my gut feeling is maybe they didn't. You know what we're saying here? We're inviting into the sukkah Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe Aaron, and David. Or none of them sat in their own sukkah. That's a bit of a revelation. What are we doing? We're giving them the nachas to invite them into our sukkah. We're saying to them, there's a mitzvah of the Torah which you know about, even if you know about it only for the future. And look at your generations, how they not only indulge in this mitzvah, but they beautify the mitzvah. They decorate their sukkahs, and the kids are so excited. And every year, bring them into thousands and thousands of sukkahs around the world to give them this sense of what you started. Look how it has continued. Look how beautiful. It's an idea that occurred to me, and it may very well be the reality. That why we bring in these biblical characters, because we are sure that they didn't sit in the sukkah. At least there's a very strong reason to say that they didn't. And we're bringing them into our sukkahs to give them this nachas. Look at what we are doing in our world, which is based on all the Mesirat Nefesh, all the incredible efforts that those people made such a long time ago to bring this religion to some sort of focus in the world that they lived in. Particularly the Avod lived in such a pagan world. And here they're talking about one God and everything else. And look now, 2,500, 3,000 years later, look at your children, your grandchildren, your new generations going on and on and on. Look how they enjoy and they beautify and they make this mitzvah so precious. You invite them in, not because you want them to honor you just by being there, but you want to give them nachas as well. And I think that is a very... I don't know what to say. I'm not sure even if it's controversial, but it does come as a bit of a shock that maybe none of those people really sat in the sukkah. That may come as a surprise. I really don't know. But there is strong evidence, even to say David didn't sit in the sukkah. If you want to look it up, Erechim, page 32, the Gemara says there, it could very well be that even David HaMelech did not sit in the sukkah. Amazing. So think about it. Ushbizin has a certain therapeutic effect, certainly on behalf of them, coming to be with us. Look at the final thing that I've written here. In the shul where I grew up in London, I mentioned it at the beginning, the Rav, Jacob Heschel, introduced the Hasidic custom. This is something which is a Gabbai's nightmare. Every day of Sukkot, you would call up, according to the Ushbizin of the day. First day, all the Avroms, all the Yitzchaks, all the Yaakovs. Third day, all the Davids, all the Shlomos. It was unbelievable. I used to get the Leah always on the seventh day, Shana Rabbah, at least in theory. Maybe one of the Minyonim, because there's two or three Minyonim, because I'm David, Yisrael David. So I got in under the wire at the end. It's just one of those interesting things, how far the Minhag goes, that you would even try and call up according to the name of the person you're inviting into the sukkah. That becomes the name for the day. And I remember that as a clear Minhag. I haven't seen it anywhere else in any other shul in the world. And again, it's something which I thought must have come from this rabbi's background. As I said, he came from such a Hasidic background. I joked last week, many rabbis claim to see the guests actually sitting in the sukkah on each night. They invite them in. If you go to Borough Park, I'm sure you'll be able to indulge in that particular activity. The rabbi will invite in and welcome all the Ushbizim. Whatever, it's fun. And then, of course, what I'm trying to say here, the link with history, an opportunity to prepare, review the lives of these great people. Surely it's also a moment that we can sit down in the sukkah and start talking about every evening. Maybe this is a nice thing to do. You were talking about Avram, so let's review the stories of Avram. Let's say some, you know, especially if you've got the children around, for 5 minutes, just talk about what they know about Avram. Then Yitzchak, Yaakov, and particularly when you get to the latter ones, when you get to David HaMelech, it's very nice to sort of maybe even try and educate people that you know something about David, and they can link to that. And again, why no matriarchs? And I'm not even going to go into that because I know that a lot of people do include the Ushbizot, I suppose you would call them. You know, you would have all the wives coming as well. Maybe there's an idea of Tzniut that they're not so keen to go. All the sukkahs are sukkah hop around the world. Who knows? Jewish survivor. I mean, there are many, many ideas. The bottom line of all of this is that this is a beautiful, beautiful minhag. I sort of made the bed that I have to lie in, because now my wife is going to be very heavy on me when I go, please God, we're going to be with our kids. The same son-in-law for the sukkahs this year, I've got to do the Ushbizin. I can't go on to complain about it. And I'll have to sit through it and get excited about it. But what I'll probably do is take this script with, and hopefully, you know, we'll go through some of the ideas, and I'm sure I'll make my son-in-law very happy. I can tell you that, I know. And I hope there's something here for everybody to take away. A little bit of what I call a spiritual doggy bag, something to take away from the shiur. From the shiurim, everything that we've put together, hopefully in the last couple of weeks, will embellish a little bit of what we're going to go through in the next couple of weeks, make them a bit more special, I hope. And Bezrat Hashem, we should all really be blessed with a good year, a year of health, most important thing, of wealth, and really of everything that we wish upon ourselves, and certainly what we wish for others as well, should be a year of blessing. And certainly, Shana Tova, Umutuka. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.